It is week 8 of the 2023 college football season. This is the We Hate Your Team podcast, a proud member of the VSN Collegiate Network. I'm Kelly Ford, and with me, as always, is my friend and co-host, Zach King. Kinger, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing good, Kelly. Recovering from the Saturday this week, another awesome slate this previous weekend. And I want to start the show off tonight by giving you a congratulations on your Ohio State Buckeyes absolutely pummeling my lowly Purdue Boilermakers. The game pretty much went the way I anticipated, but as a fan, you hope to see just some sign of life, some sign of competitiveness from your team. This was not the case this week. There was no magic in West Lafayette. And I got to admit, Kelly, when Ohio State took the 34-0 lead in the third quarter, I was pretty demoralized. The Saturday started to escalate a little bit. The beverages went down a little bit quicker than I anticipated. I think I would have learned my lesson by now at the age 30, paid the price a little bit, but we've recovered now. And we got a slate this week that we've had circled since before the college football season started. And we got an awesome show for everybody this week.
King, it's a great slate. It always is. But yes, I'm very excited about this week. And yeah, I was just happy the Buckeyes won because, King, I didn't want to have to make a pick against the model, dude. The model's hot right now. It's doing well in the pick'em. That's the thing I'm most excited about is, hey, I get to keep trusting the model and leaning on that in the ESPN pick'em competition that we got going on.
Let's be honest. Me spotting you 20 points is a pretty generous offer on my part.
King, no one asked you to spot anything to anyone. All I'm saying is trust the model, trust the process. Everyone just needs to be tailing this thing because it's hot right now. But it's fun. It's exciting. We're going to get to some great pick'em games, King, in a bit. We've got four feature games, as we always do. And we have a guest with us, as we always do. But I don't think this guest is like any other guest that we've had before, King. She really doesn't need an introduction. I'm going to do my best to give her one anyway. She is the owner of Wager Talk. She is the host of Bet On It. She is on the Kelly Murray Show. She's got a show with Clay Travis. Her name is Kelly Stewart, but you probably know her as Kelly in Vegas. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
We are so excited to have you. Absolutely, Kelly. I tried to hit on everything there because you got so much going on, but I'm sure I missed some things. And again, you really are the woman that needs no introduction, at least to listeners of college football analytics and college football betting podcasts. But if you wouldn't mind, Kelly, just go ahead and indulge us, indulge our listeners. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you get started in this space? What made you want to do it? Who's your favorite college football team? Just give us the quick hitters and take us away here. The floor is yours.
Well, my favorite college football team is the one that cashed as an outright underdog winner for me last week. Listen, I went to Kansas State. I adore them. I do still cheer for them, but I have to also understand that they are there to break your heart. And sometimes your bets will do that as well, but not near as much as your fandom. Listen to Kinger talk about Purdue is just so painful, but I almost don't feel bad for him because I still haven't gotten over Drew Brees beating the crap out of my K-State Wildcats after losing the Big 12 championship game.
The year they were supposed to win it all. We got you guys.
I mean, it was, and in hindsight, had I been a gambler, I could have known what a quintessential letdown spot. They lose as 13.5-point favorites in the Big 12 championship game, and you thought they were going to get up for the Alamo Bowl against Purdue? Come on. But all jokes aside, it has been a really fun run. Been in the industry pretty much full time over the last 6 or 7 years. And it's been really nice to be able to do all of the media stuff in addition to all of my college football, NFL, college basketball, NBA stuff. It's been awesome. I was, you know, got out of college during the recession, moved to Vegas because there were no jobs, started working at a nightclub, and the rest is history.
That is awesome, Kelly. I did not know the nightclub start there. I know all your betting background and everything like that and how you built yourself up. So that's amazing. King is really our resident, you know, better on the podcast here. I don't do any betting since I work in college athletics as an administrator. I'm actually not allowed to. So, King, I know I usually pepper the guests with questions, and I've got some for Kelly, but I'm going to let you do the honors because this is right up your alley. And, oh, my gosh, I can only imagine, King, you're going to be taking notes here for your bets on how to handicap college football here.
I definitely could take some notes from Kelly. We use the term resonant better very loosely because I think we're starting to realize thus far I might actually be a very average gambler, but it does not stop me from sitting there and firing every week and trying to get it down. So a little bit of a unique background, obviously, for you coming from working at a nightclub, working at a bar, getting into this space. So what was that process like for you, Kelly? Did you grow up with a love of sports? Was this something you were always interested in? Or how did you first start getting into the gambling space?
Yeah, it's really interesting. A lot of people think that, you know, I get like weird questions. Was your dad a bookie, you know, or something like that? Like, that must have been how. And I'm like, no, but my dad always was a gambler. So I find it very interesting that that kind of carried over. Like, my dad was always having card games with his friends and rolling dice, doing all sorts of like random gambling type things, loved to bet on the ponies. And there would always be talks of gambling, right? Like, you'd be out with his buddies and you would hear things, but I never learned anything from him. And then my parents got divorced. We moved to Manhattan, me and my mom's sister, my Aunt Helen lived there. And you guys will see her on my social media from time to time. Actually, we are going to the game in Austin together. Her love for Kansas State athletics, she took me to everything. And I'm not just talking K-State football, K-State basketball, K-State volleyball, baseball. I mean, the baseball team was atrocious when I was a kid, and we still went to the games because that was kind of the culture in Manhattan, Kansas. And being an only child, my mom working a lot, she didn't have any kids. She would take me to all of these things as like her fill-in kid. And it was awesome because I really loved Kansas State and Bill Snyder and everything that, like, that 90s shift into the 2000s and the mid 2000s when I was in college, like, it just was like such a fun wave. I never knew. And I say to this day, it's Bill Snyder's fault I'm a sore loser. This is his fault. If K-State only wins 7 games, I'm angry about it because there was a winning culture that was established basically from when we moved to Manhattan until I left Manhattan. And it was just a really great place to grow up. I really enjoyed doing everything there was to do there. And then after college, I moved to Las Vegas. And that gambling kind of mentality was like always in my background. I mean, my dad took me to a casino for my 21st birthday. It happened to land on Thanksgiving. And instead of having family dinner and hanging out with everybody else, like, he and I went to Kansas City and went to the Ameristar. I mean, that was what I had wanted to do. And, you know, all my friends didn't get to go because they either weren't 21 yet or they were, you know, spending time with their families. And I think I won like $400 or $500 that night. And it was like, oh my God, this is what I need to do. And my dad's like, you know, this isn't realistic. Like, being a gambler is not what you can do for your life. And then I moved to Vegas and I was working at a nightclub because there was no jobs. I had a degree, but it just wasn't a thing. I worked at a bar in college. So it was just an easy transition, making cash, having a great time, you know, being single, being young, having fun, and really started to get into the sports side of things because I would go to the sports book, watch the games. I met some people who really were smart and really did understand the game from an analytical side. But then they would ask me questions like, how do you know this about K-State? Why do you know this about Oklahoma State or Oklahoma or Texas? And I'm like, well, because they're in the same conference as us, and here's this and here's that. And, oh, let me text my friend who, you know, works for the football program or is still on the team. Because, you know, at that time, I'm like 22, 23 years old. I'm not that far removed. And I kind of got in that whole world, and it just started moving rather quickly. And it was really awesome because I think that there's this whole idea of women in sports that I think is just so obnoxiously overblown. Because there was nobody that's like, you can't be here. You're a woman. You can't sit, you know, like all these like stories. This is the 1940s. Like, everybody embraced me with open arms. I asked the dumbest questions. I had to learn so many things the hard way. And there were so many great guys that said, hey, maybe you should look at it this way, or maybe you shouldn't say that on video, or let's look at things from this perspective, and really taught me a lot about handicapping, not only college football, but college basketball, NBA, NFL, and they even tried to get me to handicap baseball, and that one failed miserably because I said enough, too much analytics, not enough situations.
So talk about that process then. So you mentioned you had to learn some things the hard way. How long would it say from the time you really started to, you know, invest your energy into this, would you say that you found success and found something that was really starting to work for you?
Let's let's see. So I hit my first underdog parlay in 2013, but I wouldn't say that's when things really started to become successful for me. There was a lot of luck that went into that, which I'm forever grateful for, if you will. But I do think that there becomes a point in time where you realize, okay, I'm losing more than I'm winning. Or this process isn't working once you start looking at your spreadsheets, once you start talking to other gamblers and figuring out, okay, they won on this game, but I didn't because I didn't get the best of the number or because I wasn't managing my bankroll correctly. There's so many things that start to go into that process that I really try to preach at Wager Talk. And that is because I had to personally learn it. Like, it's not, we're not in this to lose money, right? Nobody walks up to, it's like the Family Guy episode where Peter Griffin goes up and just take my money and then he just walks away. No one wants to do that. Like, I made a joke the other day on another podcast. Like, I'm a sore loser. I don't like losing. I'm not here to lose. And that's not fun, and especially losing money. So I think going through all of those ups and downs and ebbs and flows that we do see in this industry really kind of taught me, okay, this is why you need to be disciplined with your unit sizes. This is why you need to get the best of the number. This is why you have to learn discipline and say, okay, I'm going to pass because I missed the best of the number and not chase on Sunday night football because you've had too many beers at the sportsbook with your friends.
Yep. I unfortunately can relate to that much more than I would like, Kelly. But there's 100% truth to that. And it's still such a tough process to really get yourself to train when things aren't working, getting yourself to switch things up and go do things differently, right? Change is hard for everybody. But you've obviously built a very successful, I guess, niche in this space. You've really developed your brand well. And I'm going to ask one more question. I know you've been asked this a couple times before, so I do apologize listening to some of your other previous shows, but it's something that I think is pretty interesting. And I want to ask you about it because I think our listeners would be interested. So I want to ask you kind of about the haters and the trolls that you experienced. It was refreshing to hear that you said getting into the industry as a woman, you never really experienced any hardships with that. But over your career here, you've worked at a couple companies, Barstool previously, now Outkick, that get an unnecessary amount of hostility and hate online. So when you were coming up, having that first experience with these folks, was that a difficult challenge for you? Was it tough for you to adjust to kind of all the criticism, or was that something you were able to handle? You seem like you do a great job of laughing things off and rolling with the punches now. I admire that about you, but was that always easy for you?
No, I sat right here on my pulpit and preached about bankroll management and not chasing and not doing all the other stupid things that I did previously. And obviously, some of those arguments online cost me a job at ESPN. Was it only because of that? I'm not going to say 100%, but yes, I would say that some of those unnecessary either rebuttals or insults back or whatever you want to look at it with was because I wasn't able to handle the criticism because I didn't really understand why I was being criticized. Here I was on a social media platform putting out my picks just like anybody else and doing videos at Dawn Best and having a good time with it. And I'm like, why do these people hate me? What did I do that made them hate me? And instead of realizing that that's probably a problem within themselves, I fought back. Because that was kind of what I thought was the right thing to do. Like, I'm not going to sit here and let you say bad things about me or lies about me or maybe even truths, but that doesn't need to be said to me or about me in regards to whatever they thought. It was just another learning process that I unfortunately had to go through. I think that the older you get and the wiser you get, no matter what it is, you start to realize a lot of this shit doesn't matter. And those guys don't matter. They never mattered. But in the moment, I think they did to me because whether it was a pride thing or it was like, you're not going to talk to me this way. But at the end of the day, 99% of them are faceless, nameless guys on the internet that probably don't have a lot of things to be happy for in their life. And it's an unfortunate thing. But yeah, I mean, I kind of said something to a prominent guy in the industry when he was complaining about trolls. And I said, I kind of jumped on it last night and I had a bunch of people who were like, get his ass. I'm like, I don't need to get him. And he hit me up in the DMs. He's like, what are you talking about? And I told him, I said, listen, I think it's funny that you want to sit here and cry now that people are coming after you because of you and your former business partner. But in reality, you talk a lot of trash on your podcast about a lot of different people. You might be what's the word when you're not really talking about the person, you don't name them, but you're basically insinuating it's them. I forget. There's like a, there's
that
like
was a term I was throwing out there was insinuating. So you're already ahead of me on that.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, whatever. Right. So if the podcast is in 2014 and they're like, yeah, there's this girl giving out pics on Twitter. Like I was probably one of the only ones I could insinuate it was about me. But now I kind of like to fight that battle for other people. I have a lot of female friends in the industry who are trying to do things their own way. Some of them ask me for advice. Some of them I say exactly what not to do. Sometimes that's the best advice you can give instead of telling them what to do. But I would say that it's just gotten to the point now where I either joke about it, I mute you, or I just say like something stupid back. Like it's not worth, unless it's going to be a funny rebuttal, it's not worth it anymore because somebody told me this a long time ago and I never thought about it, but like you can't punch down, right? So if somebody insults my looks or my age or my pics or whatever they decide, am I going to go look through their profile and say, okay, well, here's a picture of you. And now I'm going to now do that. That takes so much energy, so much energy.
You can't punch down. I love that. Kelly, so many good things in there. And I'm not even going to pretend to have 1/1000th of the number of trolls and haters that you do. Just because of your size and your brand, how long you've been doing it. It is frustrating, though, as someone who gets criticized for things that I put out with my model and the ratings and all that. It can be frustrating. And there are times that I do want to fight back. So I am going to take your advice here. Those people don't matter. They're faceless. They're nameless. I love that. I think it's great. I want to go back. I have two questions for you, Kelly. I want to go back to what you said, though, about Bill Snyder. And you jokingly said, I blame Bill Snyder for being a poor loser. I have a graphic, Kelly. I have to go back and find it. I posted it. I mean, this was a couple of years ago now, but I'll find it. I'll be able to find it somewhere. It was something along the lines of looking at Kansas State's K-Ford rating. So the power rating for Kansas State in every year that they've ever played football. And I don't have to tell you, Kansas State's had some down years. But Bill Snyder gets there, and my goodness, did they have some good years. Again, I don't have to tell you that. It was something like in the 4 years prior to Bill Snyder's hiring, in the mid or late 80s, Kansas State was the second to worst at the time, like Division I-A football program on average in the 4 years prior to his arrival. After him being there for a decade, so basically from like 98 to 2002 or somewhere in that range, they had the second best average K-Ford rating over that four-year period. For any coach anywhere, let alone some man named Bill Snyder in Manhattan, Kansas, to take the second worst program and make it the second best program in a decade, it's simply remarkable. He is one of the best college football coaches of all time, in my opinion. I understand he never won a championship. I don't hold that against him because Kansas State, no offense to Kansas State and their fans, did not have the history of some of these other programs that are out there winning. He brought that history. He made that history. He made Kansas State into what they were at that time and into what they are right now. I mean, you can trace it back to Bill Snyder, the success they're having now coming off a Big 12 championship. So my two questions. The first one is, what is your favorite Kansas State memory? I'm sure it maybe has to do with Bill Snyder, but what's your favorite Kansas State memory? I'll say football because you went to all the different sporting events. You said, what's your favorite Kansas State football memory?
Oh, it's really tough. It's really easy to tell you the worst because that's like what's ingrained in your brain. I want to say when K-State beat Nebraska, now the K-State was like a 3.5-point favorite in that game. Looking back, that's my favorite thing to do is look up old spreads. And I'm like, that wasn't even an upset. And they had Eric Crouch's like helmet all the way back around. That was Dirk Oaks, I believe. Either way, I remember being like 13, 14. And my dad had came to that game. My Aunt Helen had an extra ticket. She's like, yeah, bring your dad. You can give him the ticket for Christmas or whatever. And it was snowing and it was awesome. And K-State ended up winning that game. And I remember everybody's bum rushing the field. And I'm like, let's go. And my dad's like, you cannot rush the field. You're going to get trampled. I'm never going to find you. Like, this was way before cell phones and all that stuff. And I'm like, no, I need to go down there. And he's like, you can do it when you're in college. Well, guess what? When I was in college, we had a man named Ron Prince as the head of football coach. So guess who didn't get to storm the field in college? But I actually think probably my next favorite moment that I got to experience as what I would call an adult, or at least we got to have adult beverages. I think it was my freshman year of college. We played Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game. And right out of the gate, Oklahoma marched on the field, scored 7-0. And it was like so magical. I was standing on the second row with my girlfriend, Ashley. And all of a sudden, it was just like Darren Sproles turned on the afterburners, tie game. And I swear to you, my memory is like 28-7. Like, I don't know if I blacked out. And I don't mean from alcohol. Not that drinking. Like blacked out, like the second touch on the third, but then all of a sudden it was like 28-7 late in the third quarter. And I'm like, oh my God, we're going to beat Oklahoma, because nobody thought A, we had a snowball chance in hell to beat Oklahoma. And there I was in the stadium seeing it live. That was 70% red or maroon or whatever color Oklahoma technically wants to claim. And it was such an awesome moment, because I didn't really get any of those outside of that, like as an adult, until, you know, much later, Colin Klein. That was another horrible memory when we lost to Baylor as 13.5-point favorites. I mean, those are just so much more rememberable for me. There's so many great K-State moments that I just am like, eh, whatever. Syracuse, Fiesta Bowl. I mean, what a great time. Just an absolute throttling. We had an amazing time in Scottsdale. Nope, don't care about it. I only care about the ones that just really wrecked my soul.
No, absolutely. The losses hurt more than the wins feel good. That's just like human nature, and it kind of sucks, but that's the way that many people are, including myself. And yeah, that 2003 Big 12 championship game, Kansas State just steamrolled number one Oklahoma. I remember that game, and I remember Oklahoma still going to the BCS National Championship after that, yeah. I believe, which was interesting. But that leads nicely into my second and final question that I have for you. You said you remember the losses and you remember what pains you. That's actually where I was going anyway. Not Kansas State, though. Okay, you're a prominent bettor, Kelly. You've been doing it for a long time. What is the worst beat? What's the bad beat? Someone says, what's the worst bet? What's the best bet you had that just turned out so poorly you couldn't believe it? Like, what comes to your mind right away when you think worst beat I've ever had?
So I don't have to talk about Mizzou pick six, Texas Tech pick six from this year, because those were two top fives, and those are the most memorable because they are the most recent. So the recency bias, I don't remember what year this was. Let's call it 2014, maybe 2015. I had NC State plus 7.5 versus North Carolina. And go ahead, touchdown, line up, kick the PAT as time's going to expire. North Carolina's going to win by 7. I've got 7 in the hook. Snap. The kicker runs it in for 2, by 8. That one was pretty gross. I remember I was sitting in the Bellagio Sportsbook watching that one before I went into work. And I was just sitting there. My girlfriend's like, are you good? And I was like, no. And she was like, are you going to come to work? I go, yeah, because I got to go make more money now. Do you want to know what happened to me? That was like, rip your guts out. I mean, it was a back and forth tie game the whole way. And it was just that just fluky things are usually what people are going to remember. And like those pick sixes, they don't happen all that often. It just sucks that 2 of them happen this year, right? And you're going to get them to go the other way, right? Like everybody that had Oregon or everybody that had LSU, they're not going to remember that. You don't remember the good things out. You remember that, like, get your guts ripped out, left on the field, and you're like, okay, I'm never going to recover from this.
Sports betting is not for the faint of heart. That is for sure. That is an absolutely brutal beat on a muffed extra point, run it in for 2, and lose by half the point. That is crazy. King, I could go on and on forever with Kelly. We're recording, as we always do, late night. I mean, we got to get going into the game, so I hate to cut off the conversation, but we need to. King, Kelly is a big Kansas State fan. She's made that clear. I'm sure if Kelly wants a new Kansas State sweatshirt, a new Kansas State hat, she's probably got the hookup. But for those of us who aren't Kelly in Vegas, where can we go to get our favorite college football apparel?
We got a special treat this weekend from our sponsor, Home Field Apparel. We got new bomber jackets dropping this Friday. The weather's getting cold. We're mid-October at this point, and everybody needs to go out and make sure they get themselves some new cold weather gear for the end of this season. So we got a promo, as we've had for every week this season, 15% off to first-time buyers using code VARIETYSPORTS. Go get yourself some new gear from Home Field.
Love it, King. Get on over to Home Field. Get yourself some new college gear. Wear it out there. You're going to need it. The weather has turned cold in most parts of the country. It's football weather, especially here, King, in the Midwest, where you and I reside. All right, let's get into our 4 feature games. As always, we let our guest pick a game, and we let the guests lead it off. So the game that Kelly has selected this week is out of the Mountain West Conference. We got Colorado State at UNLV. So Kelly, tell us why you picked this game and break this one down for us.
So I mentioned my love for the Big 12 Conference, and that is the conference that I do focus most on. Obviously, SEC because of obvious reasons, Big 10, Pac-12. But living in Las Vegas for all those years, I really got into the Mountain West Conference and really enjoyed some of these teams and what they had to offer, at least regionally. And I was on Colorado State last weekend. Was that a lucky win? I don't know. I went to bed. They were down double digits. I said, screw this. I don't even care about the Hawaii game. I'm going to sleep.
Oh, no, Kelly.
I woke up at like 2:30 and I was like, holy cow, that was awesome. Listen, statistically, we know how improbable a comeback like that was. And so I will take that with a grain of salt. And I think a lot of people might be looking to fade Colorado State this weekend against a 5-1 against a spread UNLV team. But I actually think the team we should be looking to fade is UNLV. And that is because they're off a big win over Reno. Yes, everybody in Las Vegas, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, calls them Reno, UNR instead of UNLV. And I think that that win means a lot to this program, right? This is a UNLV team that is starting to get their gears going. They're starting to play better football. And that is something that I did not see my entire time living there. But I do think that Colorado State is undervalued for a second week in a row. And that's because UNLV, again, 5-1 against the spread. Offense looks incredible. They've scored 40-plus in the last four games. Well, who'd they play in the last four games? UTEP, Vanderbilt, Hawaii, Nevada. Mr. Ford does ratings, and I'm going to go ahead and guess that those are all in his bottom 40, if not worse. And,
you're not wrong.
That being said, I think that this is an interesting spot. So, again, you've got the Rebels off beating their in-state rival. Now, yes, we all know Nevada is trash, but Nevada has owned this UNLV team for decades. They hate each other. And who do they play next week? That's right, one of the top dogs in the Mountain West in Fresno State. Is this a sandwich spot? Is this a letdown spot? I'm not going to say situationally that it is for a fact, but I do think that this is a flat spot for UNLV. 3-3 Rams made some strides over the last couple weeks. We saw them put the pedal to the metal against Colorado, which was their in-state rival. They had a really nice comeback win last week after an ugly performance versus Utah State. I think they have a better resume, and 7 in the hook is just too many points. I think they can go into Las Vegas and possibly win this one.
Love it. King, what do you make about this game?
Yeah, I'm with Kelly in that I like Colorado State this week. This is a pretty good game, or pretty big game in the Mountain West. Two teams coming in this year looking to rebound. Both have had some pretty solid success thus far up until this point. So the over-under sitting at 64.5, it tells you a lot about that game. This is a game that we should see some points. Neither one of these defensive units is very strong. And Colorado State comes into the game second nationally, averaging over 350 yards per game through the air. Outside of that Michigan game, who was UNLV's lone loss, this is the far and away the best offense that the Rebels have played this year. They come in with a secondary ranked 124th, and this is a matchup advantage that I think Colorado State should be able to take advantage of. Now, the issue with the Rams, though, has been the turnovers. They got a guy in Braden Fowler, Nicolosi. He can sling it a little bit, but the interceptions have been a problem. He's already got 11 picks this year to 14 touchdowns. He can't be gifting the Rebels easy picks. I think UNLV does match up relatively well in the run game. This is not a Colorado State team that runs the ball very well. They're only 154 attempts on this year, only averaging 2 yards per carry. This is a one-dimensional Rams offense, and I think UNLV is going to have a tough time with that receiving core. Now, the UNLV offense, like Kelly said, they're rolling right now. They're 14th in the nation, currently 37.5 points per game. They got a little bit of an interesting QB situation going on. Doug Brumfield was their starter to open the year. Got banged up a little bit versus Vanderbilt. It's been true freshman Jaden Maiva who's taken over. He's led them to victories each of the last 3 weeks. Coming off the bye, I think it is going to be freshman Maiva again. He's an interesting prospect. Definitely not a polished passer, but he's been pretty good for the Rebels. And UNLV likes to rely heavily on the run game. They're over 220 yards per game this year on the ground. And this is a Colorado State defense that has not stopped the run thus far this year, allowing over 220 yards per game, 4 yards per carry. This is not a good Colorado State defense. And I am hesitant to lay the points with UNLV this week. I do think they are going to find a way to win this game. I think Colorado State's turnover issue, 16 on the year on top of those interceptions, is a cause of concern. But I like them to keep this close in this one. I think they've got the offensive firepower in this one. And I do agree with Kelly that this could be a little bit of a letdown spot for that many points for UNLV.
Taking me a minute to get used to being the second most notable Kelly on the podcast this week. Can you keep saying like Kelly said, like, and I'm like,
I was thinking about that. I knew I was going to make it. It was going to be difficult for me to separate the two there.
Cause we got Kelly in Vegas on Kelly Ford. Come on, man, figure it out. Okay, guys, for me, I'm a little bit on the other side of you here, at least with the model. So at 5-1, 4-game winning streak, UNLV putting together a really nice season. The Rebels have two more wins than my preseason realistic expectations projected at this point in the season. That makes them the number 6 overachiever right now nationally. My model has UNLV minus 10.5 in this one. It's a 77% win expectancy. The Rebels' current power rating of negative 3.7 and their corresponding ranking of number 85 are both season highs. So to Kelly's point, that could mean that regression is due to hit this team at this point. The defense is number 95, while the offense, again, it's at a season best, number 66. Colorado State, fresh off one of the most improbable and exciting comebacks of the season, really of the decade, against Boise State last week. I even had this in my notes, Kelly, before I heard you say what you said. In my notes, I have, side note, this is exactly why you don't leave a game early or go to bed early. I'll be putting that on some K-Ford merchandise coming here in the next few weeks. So I get it. It was late. People went to bed. We can't do it. We can't do it. There's so many things that could happen in a college football game. Colorado State proved that last week. The Rams are number 109 in the power ratings. They have the number 99 defense, the number 112 offense. My numbers suggest the Rebels should have the advantage on both sides of the ball, and this game is in Las Vegas. Air Force is the favorite in the Mountain West, Fresno State and Wyoming after that, but UNLV currently has a 23% chance to make the champ game. With a win, that jumps to a 27% chance, while a loss all but eliminates the Rebels from the conference title race. So to recap it, I have UNLV minus 10.5. It's a 23% chance that Colorado State beats the Rebels for the 5th consecutive time, guys. King, this next game is one that you wanted to talk about. It's a huge one in the ACC. And if you would have told me in August that this would be one of the biggest games in the ACC, I probably wouldn't have believed you. But here we are. It's Duke at Florida State.
100%, Kelly. Big game in the ACC, and we're about to get a real good look at Duke these next 2 weeks. We're about to see how real legit they are. They got road games at Florida State and Louisville back-to-back. So this is going to be a real good gauge this week. And I'm trying to pick some highlights in different teams. It's a great matchup. Duke coming off a pretty dominating win at home versus NC State. And I really think I've talked myself in the Blue Devils covering this 14 and keeping it around single digits this week. Now, that being said, I am treading a little bit cautiously with this Duke defense. From a betting perspective, the front seven is a little bit worrisome. They don't have big bodies up front. They haven't been great at stopping the run, haven't been too great at generating pressure, which could indicate some trouble with a guy like Jordan Travis from Florida State. But this Seminoles offense, they're primarily passing. They're 116th nationally with only 195 attempts on the ground. But they have Trey Benson, and when they are running the ball, they have been very effective. Over 5 yards per carry this year. And I think we see a little bit of a different game plan for the Seminoles this week. I think we are going to see them focus a little bit more on the run and try and grind down that Duke defense where other teams have had success. And you look at this Duke secondary, they are going to have their hands full as well. This is a very talented wide receiver core for Florida State. But this is a veteran-laden Duke secondary, and they're not going to be afraid to challenge this wide receiver unit. Miami transfer Al Blades Jr. been really solid for them at the cornerback position. They got a solid veteran safety crew as well. They have not played an offense with the firepower of Florida State, but I think they can find a way to at least somewhat neutralize this run game, they have the ability to compete with the Seminoles in this one. And obviously the biggest boost for Duke this week, which is one of the biggest X factors and one of the reasons why I am going to take the points this week, is it looks like they are going to get Riley Leonard back. And I think that that's a huge bump for this offense, specifically in the passing game. I think the Duke offensive line is good enough to move the ball in the run game. If you bring in a dual threat like Leonard that has the ability to stretch the ball down the field, I think it bodes well for the Blue Devils. Now, that being said, the Duke passing game has not been very explosive this year. They're going to absolutely need to take some shots down the field in this one. And with how Elko has this team playing, I like the momentum here for this to be a good football game. I think Florida State's ultimately going to win this one outright at home, but I'm pretty high on Duke this week. I like the points in this one.
Here's a stat for you guys. I don't think it's actionable, but I found it interesting. Florida State is 19-0 all time against Duke, with the first meeting taking place in 1992. So this is a recent series, and Florida State has owned it to the tune of zero losses. This game has a watchability score of 8.7 out of 10. It makes it the number six game of the week for me. Florida State's put together one of the best resumes in the country, guys. The Seminoles rank number seven in relative scoring margin, number one in record achievement. There's only an 11% chance that the average top 25 team would be undefeated against Florida State's schedule to date. At 6-0, Florida State has 1.6 more wins than my preseason realistic expectations projected through week seven. That's number 12 nationally. You put it all together, and Florida State's number two in my most deserving rankings this week, behind only Oklahoma. But resumes don't win you games. The predictive analytics do. I have Florida State minus 12. It's an 80% win expectancy for the Seminoles. Florida State's been power rated between number 3 and number 11 all season. They're currently number 7 with the number 12 offense, the number 16 defense. For Duke, the Blue Devils currently have a season-high 13.2 K-Ford rating, and their corresponding number 21 ranking is also the best that they've had all season. Been very impressed with what Duke's been able to do on the field so far this year. The offense is number 26. The defense is ranked a season-high number 12. This Duke defense, Kinger, you touched on it there, has been just absolutely phenomenal and very efficient against the opponents that they faced. Both units ranked number 12 here. My numbers project a pretty even matchup between the Florida State offense and that Duke defense. The difference for me in this game is the advantage that the Seminoles offense should have against the Blue Devils defense. Plus, this game is in Tallahassee. Florida State, currently the favorite in the ACC, a 92% chance, you guys, to make it to the conference championship game, a 64% chance to win it. The Seminoles currently have the second best chance to make the CFP at 68% by my numbers. With a win, these numbers jump to 97% chance to make it to Charlotte, 77% chance to make the CFP. But with a loss, they drop to 70% and 31%. Respectively. Duke, they're still on the outside looking in. They currently have a 27% chance to make it to Charlotte, but a win bumps it all the way up north of 50, 56% chance to make it to the ACC championship with a win. A loss brings it down to 19%. To recap it, Florida State minus 12 is what the model says. It's a 20% chance that Duke earns their first ever win against Florida State. Kelly, what do you think about this game?
Yeah, I'm with you. I made this game 13.5, so I didn't think there was a ton of value on Duke. I do think that they're going to be a popular underdog this week, and rightfully so, right? Since last season, 13-6 against the spread, 6-2 against the spread as an underdog. Of course you're going to want to back them as an underdog here. But like King said, this is where it gets really tough for me. Is Riley Leonard a go? I'm looking at Mike Elko's press conference from earlier. He says day-to-day. Can we assume he's probably going to play? Yes, even though he didn't play last week against NC State, didn't really matter. NC State just has not been great, except for, of course, the time I took the points with Marshall and had a really terrible fourth quarter there. That being said, we'll see. Kind of got my eye on this one. If it ticks any higher, which I don't think it will, like if it hits 14.5, I think there might be enough value for me to back the Blue Devils here. But you're right. The Noles were a team that got a lot of love coming into the season. I didn't understand it. I talked a lot of trash about Mike Norvell since I've lived in the state of Florida because I've seen him single-handedly lose football games that he should have won. This is where my handicap's a little different than the other Kelly. He is very math-based, model-based, which I respect. We need those guys. I also need a little bit more of the eye test. And that is actually something Florida State has been able to do this year. Previously, I could not get to the window with them. The last time I had bet them actually was 2 years ago against Notre Dame. I took them plus 7.5, went to overtime, had a shot to win it, got out coached, flat out got out coached. And those are some of those kind of coaches where you'll see whether it's college football or NFL, I don't want to back. Monday night, did not want to back either one of those teams. I said Chargers one-score games, I'll throw them in a teaser. Because when you have inept coaches, it makes your life a little bit harder, right? And we're going to talk about one of those inept coaches here in a little bit. I believe they're on the list as well. And that is exactly going to be my breakdown here. But I do think Mike Norvell has really turned a corner. Obviously, Jordan Travis is an absolute and utter stud. Florida State has a ton of weapons. Duke, I did not have them finishing, you know, in the top three in the ACC on my list this year. Kind of a surprise team, but what Mike Elko's been able to do with that team has been nothing short of impressive. I think we're going to see a very great game on our hands, like your model predicts, almost one of the best games of the weekend. So let's hope for Kinger that Duke keeps it really close and we get an exciting game.
I love it. And yes, Kelly, don't you worry. In the pick 'em, we've got Clemson at Miami. You talk about some inept coaches. I think I know where you were going there. But moving to our next feature game, you said that you agree that'll be one of the best games of the week. This next game, though, you guys, it has a watchability score of 9.9. Mind you, that's out of a scale of 10. It is very difficult for this game to have any more hype by my numbers than I have currently assigned it. It's the number one game of the week. It's the number two game of the entire regular season by my watchability score formula, behind only the game, Ohio State at Michigan, to close the year. As a college football fan who considers the regular season to be sacred, I couldn't be more excited about Penn State at Ohio State. But as an Ohio State fan, I also couldn't be more nervous for this game at the exact same time. Before I dive into the predictive outlook, I asked for this game. We let Kelly pick one. We let Kinger pick one, as I do every week. Guest Kinger. I couldn't believe neither one of them picked the game. I said, all right, we're talking about this game because we have to, and I'm just so excited about it. So I'm taking it first here. Before I get into the predictive stuff, I want to look at these resumes. Ohio State's number four in the most deserving rankings. There's only a 17% chance the average top 25 team would be undefeated against their schedule. And the Buckeyes are outscoring their opponents by 13 points per game, more than would be expected of the average top 25 team against the Buckeyes' schedule. On the other side, Penn State is number 10 in my most deserving rankings. Yes, Penn State fans are not happy about that. Hey, listen, Penn State fans, you win the game this week, I promise you, you're going to be in the top four. You might even make your way all the way up to number one in the most deserving. The Nittany Lions are number 11 in record achievement right now, but they're number two in relative scoring margin. They are outscoring their opponents by 16.2 points per game, more than would be expected of the average top 25 FBS team against that Nittany Lions schedule. That is a mark exceeded only by Oklahoma's 18.2 in relative scoring margin. Penn State, you can question how difficult has the schedule been, but they have absolutely throttled the opponents that they've played. No team has a better chance to improve their resume with a win this week than Penn State. There is only an 18% chance that the average top 25 team would be expected to win in Columbus this weekend. Here we go with the predictive stuff, guys. I'm nervous as an Ohio State fan, but I'm so pumped as a college football fan. The model has Ohio State minus 4.5, so very close to what Vegas has it. It's a 62% win expectancy for the Buckeyes. For the fifth straight week, I have Ohio State number one in my power ratings. The defense is now at a season-best number 4, while the offense is currently ranked number 9. Kyle McCord and that offense will need to be ready, because this is the best opposing defense that the Buckeyes will face all season based on my current numbers. At 24.9, this is the highest I've had Penn State power rated all season. The Nittany Lions are currently number 4 with a season best number 2 defense and the number 21 offense. The defenses should have the advantage on both sides in this one by my numbers, but the defense, I just talked about what Penn State's offense is power rated. The difference in this game for me is that number 21 Penn State offense. It's the only unit in this game ranked outside of the top 10 nationally for me. Plus, and this might be the most important factor, this game is in Columbus. It's an absolutely massive game in the Big Ten East race and the college football playoff picture. Currently, Ohio State has a 37% chance to make the Big Ten championship and a 36% chance to make the playoff. With a win, those numbers jump to 53% and 58% respectively. But with a loss, guys, Ohio State fans don't want to hear this. With a loss, my numbers assign just an 11% chance to make it to Indianapolis and only a 3% chance to make the playoff. Ohio State is behind the eight ball. For as good as they've been, they're behind the eight ball big time if they lose this game. For Penn State, the Nittany Lions currently have a 30% chance to make it to Indy and a 26% chance to make the CFP. If they win, they jump to 56% and 62% respectively. So that ceiling is higher for Penn State. The upside is higher for Penn State in this game than it is for Ohio State. With a loss, those numbers fall to 14% and 5% respectively. To recap it, I got Ohio State minus 4.5. It's a 38% chance that Penn State earns their first win against the Buckeyes since 2016 and their first win in Columbus since 2011. Kelly, coming to you next on this one. What do you think about Penn State at Ohio State?
I think it's going to be a great game. I think that the total is really low. I know we just spoke about both defenses, but I was shocked to see the total that low. And we'll get to that here in a minute because I know you want an answer about the side. So yesterday, I'm in several gambling group chats, let's be honest, because some of the guys don't like each other. It's a whole mess. But I had a guy text me and he's like, Kelly, I love Ohio State. Talk me off of it. And I said, hey, listen, I made Ohio State one on a neutral. And he goes, well, what does that mean? I go, well, that's the problem. And he goes, what do you mean? What's the problem? I said, I've never been to the Shoe. I have people tell me it's worth 3.5 points. I have people tell me it's worth 5 points. Just like if you look at some of my other friends' predictive models, they have Manhattan, Kansas as a 3. And I'm like, you're insane. Manhattan, Kansas at night is at least a 5. Right. So we could argue intricacies of home field advantage till we're blue in the face. But that basically tells me that either I make the game 4.5, which is the Vegas line, or I need to make the game higher. Because if I'm on the low end of this home field advantage, then here we sit. Now, James Franklin, he and I have had some run-ins over the years. He has cost me so much money, and I have been so angry at this man so many times. But then all of a sudden, he now covers 13 straight games, and the whole world loves him. It's been really hilarious. And part of the reason also why I think that under is low is because Ohio State's games have just been under the total. And again, both defenses have been great. A couple question marks as well. Trayvon Henderson, is he going to be back? He's been out in the last two games. If he's back, get the running game going a little bit better than we've seen. We know both quarterbacks have the ability to make plays through the air, but I haven't seen just that elite level of quarterback play from either one of these. I've seen flashes of it, but I have not loved it. So long story short, I'm taking the over. It may seem super square here, but the last six meetings between these two teams, an average of 61.7 points per game. And so I'm going 46.5, 47. What am I missing? Again, I do think both defenses are good, which is going to cause the offenses to have to take more shots downfield. Also, these teams playing, they're not playing Purdue, sorry, Kinger, Minnesota, Illinois. I mean, come on. This is going to be a big smash mouth football type game between these two Big Ten rivals. I expect to see a little bit more fireworks. Maybe we won't see the game in the 60s, but I would not be shocked in the slightest to see a 31-28 final.
As long as Ohio State's on the right side of that, Kelly, I'm all good with that analysis. Kinger, what about you? It's a Big Ten East game, man. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I just want to start and say that this is absolutely huge for me this week that this game is in the early slot. Shout out to Kay Ford, who will be blowing off our college roommate's wedding this weekend so he can watch college football. I will be in Fort Wayne, Indiana, but luckily I will get up and make the drive and will be in a local spot watching this game. So this really is an elite matchup. You can't frame it any other way. And we know the strength of this Ohio State team is their offense led by this elite wide receiver crew. And there are not a lot of defenses in the country that are up to the challenge of facing Ohio State. But like Notre Dame showed early in the season, I think that Penn State is in a position where they do have the talent to challenge this offense. And I'm with old sweet Lou Holtz on this one. I think the physicality for Ohio State is going to be tested. You look at this Penn State deep front seven, and they are nasty. They've got a really sound linebacking crew, really good defensive line. They are great at getting after the quarterback. Penn State currently ranks first nationally in pressure rate at over 50%. They are second in sacks with 27 on the year and currently tied for 10 in tackles of loss. This is a very aggressive front. This is a focal point for success for any team. And I think these tackles for Ohio State, two new guys, they've held up okay this year. They did okay versus Notre Dame. But this is a Penn State line that is at a different level of talent. Penn State's offense, and you guys talked about some of the issues. Now, they are a run-first team. They have not had a lot of success with the deep ball. The wide receiving crew hasn't produced this year. And you look at Ohio State, and I think that this secondary is where that they can have some success this week. This Ohio State secondary is good, but I still think that's the weak part of their defense. They've got a couple of really good defensive ends that are going to put some pressure, but I like the Penn State offensive line in this one. So ultimately, Drew Allar, he's been good. This is a guy that I was very high on this year. He's a big dude, a lot of arm strength, but the Penn State offense lacked an explosion, and he's going to have a big game this week. It's more of a systematic offense, and we'll be interesting to see if they are able to push that ball down the field and score some points. So I am really torn on this, but I'm actually in a similar situation as that Washington-Oregon game last week. I do think I like Penn State. Not going to bet it right now, but I think Ohio State does have enough that advantage in the Shoe. They are going to win at home this week.
Listen, Crane, if you're listening, you know I love you. You know I wish you the best in the marriage, in the wedding, and the life. I am a man of principle. You scheduled your wedding on a Saturday in the fall. I wasn't bluffing. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not going
to
be there, King.
Yes, I had to make sure I shamed you, Kelly, for that. I had to make sure that was announced. And
why would you shame him?
I was going to say, thank you.
That's the correct move.
Thank you, Kelly.
I did not go to my boyfriend's brother's wedding, and I would have got eviscerated, but he had it on a Friday.
There you go. See?
And so I was like, all right, I have to go. It's going to be on a Friday.
Okay, I have to admit, I might be in the minority here, and I respect it. So I maybe I'm looking at my college football fan, and maybe
I
got to reevaluate.
Your wedding's just not that important to me. And listen, it's like over. Look, if we're talking about statistics here on the show, over half of them are divorced. Half of my friends, you guys, I'm so old. Half of my friends are getting on their second marriage. Like, I'm your season wedding. Stop it.
That was absolutely great. You two against me on this.
I feel so validated to have Kelly on my side here. Like, I didn't need it because I was already comfortable in my position, but I love that I have it. It is absolutely the best. Yes, college football, it's Saturdays in the fall. Ban fall weddings. That's also going on merchandise, by the way, here in the next couple of weeks. So, all right, we've got one more feature game to get to. Kelly, we're going to let you as our guest take it first. This is the fans' pick of the week. We put the poll out there. Okay, which game here do you want to talk about? Your Kansas State Wildcats were in the poll, Kelly. The Wildcat faithful, though, didn't get enough votes. We're going to the SEC for our fourth and final feature game. It is Tennessee at Alabama, a huge game in the Southeastern Conference. Kelly, what do you make of this game?
Yeah, I didn't even vote for K-State TCU. That game absolutely has my mind in a pretzel, whether it's going to be Avery Johnson or Will Howard. And I'm not going to get any answers because they're not going to give any. They want TCU to have to prep for both quarterbacks, and rightfully so, because we're probably going to see both quarterbacks. My personal version of hell is when Bill Snyder ran a two-quarterback system with Daniel Sams and Jake Waters. It sucked. And that's what's
But you got to be high on Avery. You got to be pleasantly surprised with Avery Johnson.
Though. Oh, listen, I'm all about Avery, but like, let's just pick one and go with it. Like, I don't like this back and forth. It made sense. What Will, either his confidence was lacking after the three picks in the Oklahoma State game, or Texas Tech's run defense was that atrocious. It made sense to start Avery Johnson, right? TCU, quite a bit better on the defensive side of the ball. We'll see how it ends up playing out, but it does make me a little uneasy trying to revamp, if you will, the offense middle of the season. And now I'm all discombobulated and we're talking Tennessee, Alabama. Let me pull up those notes. Listen, I want to make a big case for Tennessee here. I really do. This Alabama team is a shell of its former self. Apparently I had Alabama message boards just losing their minds after I talked about Milroe getting hurt at practice. I did get a text that said he got hurt at practice. I wasn't lying. It doesn't mean the guy's dead. Like, he's still, just because he got hurt, guys get hurt at practice every single day. Everybody pumped the brakes and relaxed, and they were on absolute and utter tilt before that A&M game. That being said, good to know that I have the ability to just put an entire fan base on their backs because they lost to Texas to start the season. Bama has been running a three quarterback carousel, which is even worse than the two quarterback carousel. But it does look like Milroe is their guy, right? I just don't think he's that great of a quarterback. This Alabama offense isn't that great. Or is it just that, you know, Nick Saban's had like seven guys get drafted to the NFL in the last seven seasons. And so maybe it's not that it looks that bad. It's just not as good as it once looked. But here's the caveat. The Bama defense is what's won in these football games. And that is where I am really concerned about this Tennessee team. Sure, back in Knoxville, Tennessee looks great. They go on the road to the swamp and get beat up by a really mediocre Florida team. I want to trust them. I really do. And I always tell people, and Kay Ford can talk about this, whether or not you can quantify this, but you cannot, at least not in my world, quantify revenge, right? If you remember last year, Alabama went into Neyland, got beat, very late, high-scoring game, and I just don't know if I trust the Vols here in their second true road game of the season to show me something that is going to tell me that they can beat Alabama. I made this game 7.5. So at 8.5, 9, is there some value on Tennessee? Sure, we know 8 and 9 more so than 8 aren't as nice of football numbers in terms of gambling. But man, I you know, on Tuesday evening, I just can't trust this Vols team to go in there and get a win. Maybe a late score, get a backdoor cover, like we've seen several teams do, including Arkansas last week against this Alabama team. But I really just don't have faith in them. I would like to, but unfortunately, as of right now, as it stands on Tuesday night, so if on come Friday, I put this team in my parlay and I'm like, they're going into Tuscaloosa and they're going to win. Everybody calm down. Don't hold it against me.
I love it. Yes, time of recording, Tuesday night. Time of the episode releasing is Thursday morning. Things can and will change. We know that. Kelly, I've got some comments to the two questions or comments that you just posed there. But King, let's bring you in first on this. What do you make of this absolutely massive game in the SEC? A game in which really neither team can afford a loss if they want to achieve their season goals.
Yeah, I'm with Kelly, and I do tend to lean Tennessee on this one, but I think I have to implement a new rule, and I'm going to need your help with this, Kelly. You cannot allow me to bet on Alabama games no longer. The Crimson Tide just absolutely continue to haunt me year in, year out. It's pretty much a consistent theme with them. I bet against them because I love to do that. They almost always win outright and cover those games that I bet against them, and then when I bet with the Tide, they still win outright in most cases, minus Texas this year. But they win, but don't cover. Example, Arkansas last weekend after a 24-6 lead late in the third quarter. So Alabama, this is a team that drives me nuts. I'm 0-3 betting the Tide this year. So I am implementing a new rule. We'll see how long it lasts, but we're going to lay off them for a while. And so I want to start this week by with a conversation around this Tennessee offense. And I'm going to bring up subject here, Joe Milton. I have to ask the question to you both. Is it too early to say that Joe Milton might not be as good as we thought? We're over halfway into the season now. This is a guy that we are really yet to see him click. There was a ton of hype around him in the offseason. Arm strength, size, mobility. There's absolutely no denying the physical potential. I totally get that. But he comes into this week only completing 61% of his passes. He's 12th in the SEC in passing yards. I know the receivers are a little bit banged up. No Brew McCoy. They don't have the talent as last year's. But these numbers raise some eyebrows with how far Tennessee's production has fallen off this year. I wasn't fully on board with Milton, and I'm really not sure if my opinion has changed thus far this year. I mean, the passing offense is poor, and the saving grace for them has been the run game. They do have a really good offensive line. They got a trio of running backs that have led them to be the number 6 unit in the country, averaging almost 6 yards per carry, over 230 yards per game. This is going to be the matchup that's critical for the Vols this week. If they want to have any chance of winning this game on the road, they're going to have to make sure they get that run game going and take some of that pressure off Milton. But that Bama defense, Kelly, I was in a position where I was dogging on the Bama defense early in the season. I didn't think that this unit it was up to the standards that we've seen from Saban teams in the past. But I have to admit, the front 7 over the last couple weeks has been impressive for me. They've only allowed 167 total rushing yards to 2 good running teams in Arkansas and A&M. They've looked to find their stride as a unit. And with this pass rush, they are dangerous. They're 3rd in the country, 26 sacks. I 100% expect Saban to key in on this run game this week, work to keep Milton in the pocket. And with his corners, Kool-Aid McKinstry, that talent in the secondary, I think he's going to allow them to take their chances one-on-one and make Tennessee push the ball down the field. So the defense is really going to – the run game, the defense is what's going to be to keep the Vols in it this week. I do think they have the ability to cause some issues for the Tide. We've talked about how much this unit has improved this year compared to last year. Played a questionable quarterback, unsteady quarterback in Max Johnson last week. I say they get another shot at that this week because Jalen Milroe has been inconsistent at times, although I do agree he is getting his feet under him a little bit. I'll give credit where it's due. They've done a good job of setting him up with shots down the field these last couple weeks, and I really think that that's been a big part of Bama's success, has been able to connect on those big plays. So that Tennessee secondary, going to have their work cut out for them. This is a top 30 ranked unit, but they've been really good at not allowing explosive play. They've only allowed 30 plays of over 20 yards or more this year. Bama's offense has been heavily relying on those big plays as they've struggled in the run game. So I think early down success for Bama allowed them to take some of those deep shots, and I really do look forward to watching that matchup between those Tennessee DBs and that Bama wide receiver crew. So ultimately, final evaluation here. Winning on the road in Bryant Denny is very hard to do. Winning on the road when you have a pretty much one-dimensional football team right now is pretty harder. I think Bama is going to get their revenge this year. I think the defense is going to showcase this week. So as much as I do think Tennessee keeps it close, I am very confident that Alabama is going to win this game outright at home.
think the last team to win at Bryant-Denny not named Alabama was Joe Burrow's LSU team in 2019, if I'm not mistaken, Kinger. Kinger, one thing I'll say before I get to my analysis and some comments on Kelly's that I said I would. I'm looking at the schedule, King. I'm going to go on a limb and say that your Bama boycott from betting, it's going to last 2 weeks. It's going to last this week, and it's going to last next week when Alabama's on a bye, by the way, because then they get LSU coming to town the week after that. I know you. There's no way you're not putting money down on something in that game. There's no way.
Likely true. We're gonna give it a good effort, though. We're just going to see how long it lasts. There's no promises. There's no expectations here.
I say 2 weeks. That's what I'm giving it. Guys, there are two things that I love most about college football. It's upsets and it's rivalry games. This game always checks at least one of those boxes. And last year, it checked both. Kelly, to your question or your point about revenge, you can't quantify revenge. I am very quick to say my model and no model out there can quantify everything. There are intangibles. There are things going on in and around a program. There are things happening in 18 to 22 year olds' lives. There are things happening with an oblong ball that over the course of a game, we cannot model, we cannot account for. There's this thing called luck. And yes, it's real and it happens and people make mistakes. We see it all the time. Coaches do, players do, refs do. You can't capture everything. Revenge, that is certainly something that we cannot capture. And yes, Alabama will have it on their mind without a doubt. With a watchability score of 9.5, this is my number two game of the week. It's a top 20 regular season game of the entire year based on my current numbers. I have Alabama number 7 and Tennessee number 21 in my most deserving rankings. The Crimson Tide are number 7 in record achievement. They're number 13 in relative scoring margin. The Volunteers are number 21 and number 18, respectively. Only 5 teams can improve their resume more with a win this week than Tennessee can with a win in Tuscaloosa. The average top 25 team would have a win expectancy of just 30% at Bama this week. The model has Alabama minus 7.5. So I think that's exactly what we were talking about earlier, Kelly. That's what I make it. It's a 71% win expectancy for the Crimson Tide. That said, Alabama's current power rating of 21.3 and their corresponding ranking of number 10 are both season lows. This is the first time the Crimson Tide have been number 10 or worse in my power ratings since 2008. Guys, I wasn't doing the power ratings in 2008. That's applying the historical formula that I have to try to estimate going back farther. This is the worst Tide team we've seen since Nick Saban's second year in Tuscaloosa. But as I've said before about Alabama and about Georgia, these teams don't have to be better than their previous versions. These teams only have to be better than the teams they're playing on the schedule this year. And my numbers think Alabama is still better than Tennessee here. The Tide's offense is currently number 23. The defense has been really efficient. They rank number 5 nationally by my numbers. That is bad news for Tennessee, as this is the best opposing defense that the Vols will play all year based on my current numbers. And Tennessee is currently at a season low, number 22 on the offensive side of the ball. King, you talked about Joe Milton. Hey, listen. I'm not going to blame it all on Joe Milton, but when I have a offense projected to be the number 3 unit in the country coming into the year, and they are now number 22, they have fallen short of expectation. It doesn't mean they're not good. They're still a top 25 offense. It doesn't mean they're not good, but the expectation was they should be elite. I know they lost a lot out of last year's team, and that's accounted for. Joe Milton has not played up to the level that many, including my model, expected of him this year. Doesn't mean he's a bad quarterback. Doesn't mean he's a bad player. Just means he hasn't lived up to it yet. He's got a huge chance to make a statement this weekend. The offense is at a season low, as I mentioned. The defense, though, is at a season high. It's number 14 on the defensive side of the ball for Tennessee. My numbers give the edge to both defenses, but it's the Alabama defense that's the only top 10 unit in this game nationally. Plus, this game's in Tuscaloosa. Alabama currently has a 70% chance to win the West and an 11% chance to make the playoff. With a win, those numbers improve to 75% and 16%, respectively. A loss makes it a 50-50 proposition that Alabama even makes it to Atlanta. You talk about adding some hype to that LSU game, King. Alabama loses this one. Holy cow. And it almost eliminates them with the second loss from CFP contention. Tennessee currently has a 14% chance to win the East. A win improves that to 23%. A loss down to just 9% chance to make it to Atlanta. Bottom line, I have Alabama minus 7.5. It's a 29% chance that Tennessee earns their first victory in T-Town since 2003. Guys, that is the feature segment. We went deep into those games. That was a ton of fun. We now, as we always do, need to transition over to the ESPN Pick'em competition. Kinger, you mentioned it at the top. Shoot, I mentioned it at the top. I tweeted about it. Listen, we got a group of 130 or so in there. The model, it struggled a little bit in weeks one and weeks two. I think I was down somewhere in the 50s, right? Kept the faith, keep trusting it, do what it does. Now number one in the entire We Hate Your Team group, King. I know you're coming for it. I know the people, the group is coming for it. Kelly, I know you are motivated to win the competition this week, so it's going to be fun. The way this works, Kelly, is we've got 10 games we're going to look at. We got you pick the outright winner, just straight up, no spreads involved. Who is going to win the game? And then confidence points, 1 to 10. You use each number once. 10 is your most confident pick. 1 is your least. So go ahead and hit us. We'll start with you, then we'll go to King, and then we'll come to me on each of these games. Hit us with who's going to win. Any analysis you want to give is, of course, welcome, but not required. And then how many confidence points do you have? We're going to start. We go in order of the ESPN Pick'em. We're going to start with a game that we actually broke down. We've got Penn State going on the road to Ohio State. Kelly, who's your winner and how many confidence points?
So I played in a lot of contests, and sometimes I won't call it the contrarian pick, but sometimes going opposite or getting a stale number. There's lots of different ways to do this, but because this is just a pick 'em, and I know both of you guys are going to pick Ohio State, I have no choice but to pick Penn State. If Penn State somehow gets the outright win here, that's going to give me 7 confidence points right out of the gate.
I love that. The contrarian method, very popular in March Madness pools as well. Kinger, who's your winner here and how many points?
So I'm at a point in this competition where I am so far back that we absolutely got to start making some plays, some contrarian plays opposite of Kelly. So this is definitely just a heart pick, but I'm going to join Kelly in Vegas on Penn State on this, and I'm going to take him for 3 confidence points.
There goes Kelly thinking she's getting the contrarian pick. King's going with her. Here's what I'll say. Thank you both for the 5 confidence points that I'm going to gain when Ohio State now wins this game. And listen, I don't care if I miss every other pick here. I'm pulling out the fandom hat. I'll take my 5 points on Ohio State and forego the rest if it means the Buckeyes get the victory here. I don't even care if I scored 50 in the competition and this was the only 5 I'd missed. I'd be crushed. That is how much this game means to both fan bases of Ohio State and Penn State. And don't be fooled, Michigan is watching as well. Our next game, Kelly, we're going to the American. We've got Memphis on the road at UAB. What do you think here?
Yeah, Memphis has just been terrible on the road. I'll be honest with you, I've watched one of these teams and only once this year, and that was when I took Memphis over Mizzou, which did not fare well for me. I'm going to take UAB here at home just based on Memphis's lackluster road record, and I'm only going to do 2 confidence points because, again, I have not watched besides, well, I wouldn't even say I watched half that game. Mizzou absolutely just routed Memphis, and it wasn't even worth watching then.
They did. That was a great result for Mizzou a couple weeks ago. Kinger, what do you make of this one? How many confidence points and who's your winner?
Yeah, I'm on the opposite side of Kelly in this. Her comments about the road struggles for Memphis are rightly justified, but I think we potentially see a bounce back week here after that real tough loss at home versus Tulane last week. So I'm taking Memphis with 8 confidence points.
King, I'm going to match you to a T here. Give me Memphis and give me 8 confidence points in this one. Kelly, we're coming back to you for a game that I believe opened with a total of, let me check, 32. We've got Minnesota going on the road to Iowa. This is a classic Big Ten West showdown. I don't know what the total is now. It can't be lower than 32, though. I can't imagine, Kelly.
Yeah, this is going to be an absolute and utter snooze fest, right? Like, what are we going to see? Like 98 yards from each offense. It's going to be absolutely abysmal. But when the totals are low, points are at a premium, and I love me some PJ Fleck. Iowa has just been kind of floundering for weeks, and yet winning football games. Last week, I tried to get somebody to tell me why they were catching 10, and they got very lucky that Tanner Mordecai was out of that one. They got another win, but I don't know if they're going to be so lucky here against the guy who likes to row the boat. So I'm going to take Minnesota. Now, I like them plus the points. Watch Iowa do something kind of wonky and kill me here. So I'm going to go lower confidence. I'm going to say 5 confidence points here with the Gophers.
You got it. Kinger?
I'm just going to tell you both right now, I absolutely hate where I have the Iowa Hawkeyes this week. But I have the Iowa Hawkeyes for 9 confidence points. It is so tough for me, and it feels wrong to go and put the faith in that offense. But you look at the history between Minnesota and Iowa. PJ Fleck has not won a game versus the Iowa Hawkeyes. The last time Minnesota beat Iowa was 2014 on the road in Kinnick. I'm going to lean the Hawkeyes at home.
Every week, there is at least one game where I'm plugging things into the model. It's spitting out the rank 1 to 10 for this pick 'em, and it makes me want to puke. This is the game that makes me want to puke. I have to trust the model. I'm a slave to the model king. We've talked about this before. I can't go against it. You say you don't like having Iowa at 9. How about this? I'm taking Iowa, and I'm taking them for 10 confidence points, guys. I hate it. You're both laughing. I'm sorry. It's what the model says. I'm a slave. I know. Bad Kelly, but we're going to trust it. Bad Kelly Ford, that is. Kelly in Vegas, let's come to you here. We're going back to your home conference, where it all started. Unfortunately, we're not talking Kansas State, but we got the second best thing here, Oklahoma State. They're going on the road to West Virginia. What do you think about this one, and how many points?
I'm going to take Oklahoma State here and way too many confidence points here in Mike Gundy. Look, kind of September was kind of a weird time for the Cowboys, right? So last year, if you watch, they just basically lost from like mid-October on. It was terrible. Gundy got to keep his job. He didn't decide whether he wanted it to be his kid or one of his other six quarterbacks. And they were doing this juggling in September, and they lose to somebody like South Alabama. Now all of a sudden they've started to get things clicking. They beat my Kansas State Wildcats on a Friday night, got the best of the Kansas Jayhawks, and you know who else they're gonna get the best of? West Virginia. If you want to give me the coaching mismatch of the year, Mike Gundy over Neil Brown, yeah, I got 9 confidence points. Oklahoma State goes in to Morgantown, gets the outright win.
Alan Kinger, what about you?
I'm with Kelly in Vegas on this one. My gut actually says West Virginia at home. The environment should be rocking. West Virginia's run game should be able to dominate with that offensive line. But Oklahoma State, they've burned me the last couple weeks. This is a team that looks like they've found a little bit of stride. So give me the Cowboys on the road for 4 confidence points as well.
As I'm keeping track of the scorecard here that I'm updating as we're going, this now makes 4 out of 4. Kelly, you said you wanted to come in and be a contrarian, try to get some points. This is 4 in a row that you and I are on opposite sides. I'm against both of you on this one. I'm going West Virginia. My model likes them by about 5.5 in this game. So give me West Virginia, and that equates to 6 confidence points in this week's slate. Whew. Biggest game of the year so far in the MAC. Might be the end up being the biggest game of the year in the MAC. Maybe a preview of the conference championship game. We've got Toledo going on the road to Miami. My only complaint about this game, guys, is it's on Saturday. This is a classic Maction game. It needs to be on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night in November, right? But Kelly, who do you like here? Toledo at Miami.
I'm only going 1 confidence points. I do not watch enough Mac, but I did get Toledo with the outright win there. Actually, I lied. They did not get the outright win. They had a chance to get the outright win, but they did get the cover versus Illinois. I think that was week 1 for me. My problem is, though, is they are on an 0-5 against the spread run since then. And that's because Toledo's kind of had a comeback to life sort of moment here, right? I like Jason Candle as a head coach, but this team has some issues. And so 2-3 straight up on the road as an underdog, 2-13, excuse me, on the road as an underdog since 2016. I'm going to take Miami of Ohio for 1 confidence point because that's how much I know about the MAC.
Love it. Kinger, where are you going here?
Yeah, big time MAC showdown. I'm going to take Miami of Ohio for 2 confidence points.
King, usually I'm sweating. Hey, are we going to have any different picks? Finally, for the first time, we are all in agreement on a game. I'm going to take Miami, and who would have thunk? 3 confidence points. That makes me the most confident out of any of us. So no one really knows what's happening in this game. Let's move it on back to the American. This is a huge game in this conference. The winner is going to be well positioned in that kind of number 3 spot in the American, that best chances to make the championship game. We've got UTSA going to FAU. Kelly, what do you think here?
Yeah, Tom Herman as an underdog. He didn't get that role very often in Texas, but at South Florida, he was great at it. Now, I don't really watch that many FAU games. I used to watch the Roadrunners the last couple of seasons when they were great as an underdog. This is one that I'm just going to say 2 confidence points. I'm going to take the home team here with the Owls. Look, UTSA quarterback, he could just absolutely smoke me here. We've seen some flashes of greatness from him. But outside of that, I'll take the Owls, 2 confidence points.
I think Frank Harris has been in college king since you and I were in college, and that's been about a decade ago, yet he's still playing somehow. What do you think, King?
Yeah, Frank Harris, not quite as explosive, not quite putting up the numbers this year, but I still like UTSA on the road. Kelly brings up some good points with Tom Herman as an underdog there, but I think they get outright. I got him for 7 confidence points.
All right, for the first time, we've got the two Kellys teaming up against Kinger. Sorry, the second time. The first time was on Saturday Fall Weddings. So that was the first one. The first time in the pick'em, we've got the Kellys teaming up on Kinger. Give me FAU. I'm going to take them for 4 confidence points. Let's go back to the SEC West. We have Ole Miss hitting the road to play Auburn, Kelly.
Yeah, you know how bad I want to take Auburn? You know how bad I want to take Auburn last week? You know how bad I want to take Auburn the week before? You know I did take Auburn versus A&M? And guess what? Their defense did exactly what I said they were going to do. So, of course, I'd love to take the better defense with the home underdogs in the Hugh Freeze Super Bowl. Surely this man is going to do something for me. I can't do it. I can't do it. Auburn's offense is just grotesque, right? You've got Ole Miss off a bye week. Defense, I don't trust. I'll say that. If anybody can make Auburn's offense look good, it is this Ole Miss defense. But I still don't think Ole Miss is going to go in and lose this game against this Auburn's pathetic excuse for 5.3 yards per attempt of an offense. So give me Ole Miss 5 confidence points. Oh, I lied. I already took 5 confidence points. I guess I have to take 6 confidence points.
There we go. I just saw that on the score. It's 6 confidence points in the Hugh Freeze Super Bowl. I love that term. King, where are we going here?
Yeah, this is a game I absolutely love this week. I am going to lay the points with Ole Miss, and I'm going to take them for 10 confidence points. Auburn offense is atrocious. This defense these last few weeks has not really shown me too much. I think Ole Miss is way too talented here. Now, there is the chance, like Kelly said, that Auburn's offense could find a way to get some momentum in this one, but ultimately this team is more talented, and I think they're going to find a way to score a lot of points. So I'm taking the Rebels for 10.
I'm seeing 6.5, King. Is that the line you got? The
points, yeah, I got 6. I already bet him at 6.5, yeah.
My numbers make this Ole Miss minus 8.5, so I would be with you on that, and we cross a key number there of 7. Give me Ole Miss for 9 confidence points in this one. All right, out in the Pac-12, I keep saying this because it's true. This is a big game in the Pac-12. USC coming off a loss. Granted, it was not a conference game, so they are still very much in the mix for the Pac-12 title race. Utah cannot afford another loss in conference if they want to achieve their preseason goals. Utah on the road at USC, Kelly. What do you think?
Yeah, I was all over Notre Dame last weekend, and even I didn't think that Caleb Williams would still be throwing interceptions as recording as of Tuesday. I was very happy with that result. It was beautiful to see because I was having kind of a rough year, and not rough like bad, but like 4-5. 5-4, like just not great momentum building weeks. And I needed last week, and it really was helpful to have an easy winner there with the Irish. And I think that we could see a winner here with Utah. Now Utah is what? 6.5?
Yeah, I think 6.5. I think 6.5 is a lot.
That's what it was when I wrote it down earlier today. But look, here we have a defense that we know is going to punch this USC offense in the mouth. The problem is, just like the argument was with last week, everybody said about Southern Cal was, well, if you get into a shootout, well, of course, if you get into a shootout, the Utes are not going to be able to keep up, just like the Irish wouldn't have been able to keep up. But if you can force Caleb Williams, who thinks that he deserves some portion of whatever NFL team drafts him, let's be honest here. There is a lot of egos in Lincoln Riley's offense, and there are not a lot of guys that play any semblance of defense. While I would love to do more confidence points being almost a touchdown underdog on the road, I am going to take Utah outright winner, but I'm only going to go 4 confidence points.
I respect that move. It does look like at time of recording here, almost midnight, Tuesday night, Eastern time, there are some +7s out there at -110. So you could jump on that if you are interested in the touchdown. Kinger, who do you like here?
Yeah, Utah team been given USC fits over the last few years. This is a very physical defense, but ultimately I think Caleb Williams is going to end this offense. They're going to find ways to have success in this one. And so I don't think USC is going to come off the Notre Dame loss and lose at home this week. So I'm taking the Trojans for 6 confidence points.
Kelly said she was all over Notre Dame last week, saw that, or didn't see what actually happened coming, but saw a Notre Dame win potentially. The model saw it too. So many warning signs with USC. I was down on the Trojans. I continue to kind of say, hey, there's real concerns, especially on that defensive side of the ball. For the first time since week two, guys, the USC offense is not the number one unit in the country. They've fallen to number four for me this week. Still really good, but the defense still has concerns. All that said, I'm still taking USC in this game to win it outright. 7 confidence points. I won't be surprised at all if Utah does find a way to get it done, though, and Kelly picks up 4 points there. Kelly, here's a game I know you couldn't wait to talk about. You even hinted at it earlier. We're going to the ACC. 2 teams that, well, it's hard to really quantify because Clemson, like, objectively has not had the season they wanted. I think that's pretty clear. You look at Miami, though, their opponent, in terms of the season that they've had, it hasn't been that bad. It's been magnified by what was just an absolutely horrific mistake at the end of the Georgia Tech game. Then they follow up with a loss against North Carolina, a game in which they were an underdog. So both these teams really need a win, Kelly. Who's going to get it? Clemson at Miami.
Yeah, I'm not going to get Cristobal'd once again. I liked Georgia Tech 2 weeks ago. I could not have even fathomed that they would even win that game outright, let alone... I mean, Tyler Van Dyke, you're like a 6-year senior. You don't know you're supposed to take a knee. I don't care what your head coach is telling you to do. You make the football play. Anyway, that being said, I did get talked into taking Miami at UNC last week, and that was also part of the reason why I went to bed early, because I was so pissed that I added Miami to my card that one of my friends just talked me into a buy low spot. Well, guess what? Here's another buy low spot. You want to buy low on the Canes here at home? No, because they are garbage. They are not back. This team is 1-6 ATS off a loss under Mario Cristobal. Who can say this is a good football team? I have a real serious question about it. They're going to beat 1-6 Virginia. Now, the problem is offensively, Clemson is not anything to write home about, right? 19.8 points per game. But come on. Tigers defense is surely going to be able to put some pressure on Tyler Van Dyke, because Miami's offensive line cannot block more than half a second for this man. So I'm going to take Clemson in 8 confidence points here. That means Miami's going to win the game outright. You guys are welcome. Everyone in Miami, you can thank me for that one, because I just trashed your team. And anytime I usually do that, it comes back to haunt me.
Kinger, I love that analysis. Kinger, where are you going here?
This makes me scared, to be honest, because Miami's a team that I was looking at betting this weekend. Getting a 3.5 at home, I think the defense is good enough to keep them in this game. Clemson's front 7 does scare me. Miami's a team that does have to get the run game going to really have success in their offense. Tyler Van Dyke isn't really showing the potential that he showed a few years ago when he was in Heisman conversations early. So I'm going to do something a little bit, switch it up. I'm going to take Miami for 1 confidence point. This is another game that I got to try and hopefully make some moves on you, Kelly, because I'm assuming you're going to take Clemson in this one.
You assume correctly, King. What you may have not assumed is that I am not confident in this game at all. I hear everything Kelly said. I agree with almost everything that Kelly said there. I put some of it on Van Dyke too. I feel like that was kind of overlooked, but it's like, dude, like, just, you got to know, you got to kneel there. Like, this is Cristobal, come on. But there's some accountability to go around outside of Cristobal too. Anyway, that's a couple weeks ago. For this game, guys, I actually had this as a 50-50 pick'em. I'm looking at my, like, I had to, on the dashboard, I don't go into decimals. So as I'm picking this game, I'm like, okay, I actually have to go into the spreadsheet and see who's the real favorite here. 49.7 to 50.3%. That's the breakdown here. Give me Clemson, 50.3% win expectancy. So I say I follow the model to a T. I follow the model to a T. Give me Clemson. I'm taking them for 1 confidence point, but I kind of think they're going to win by more than, well, obviously more than a pick'em. I could see them really putting a hurting on Miami, and things would get away from the Canes quickly, I think, if the game starts the way that Clemson is going to want it to. Final game. We're going to the Sun Belt. It's Georgia State at Louisiana. Kelly, who you got here?
Yeah, I'm going to take, this one's tough. And this is my problem. I want to take ULL, but I have not watched hardly any games in the Sun Belt this year. And if you don't watch games and you're just using math models, you're not getting the full story, right? And that's what makes this really tough. So I only have a 3 left to use, which was really poor contest planning on my part. I probably should have made this a 2, but then I would have had to make FAU a 3 or Miami of Ohio a 3, and I don't want either of those to be worth that many points either. So, gun to head, I'm going to take ULL, the Raging Cajuns at home, for a 3. I really have no analysis on this game. I even tried to, like, pull some stuff off the internet so I could pretend like I knew something about this game. I got nothing.
Kinger, what about you?
Well, since Kelly's being honest, I'm going to be honest too and say I don't have a whole lot of input on this game as well, but I am also taking Louisiana and I'm taking them for 5 conference points.
King, I've said this before, I'll say it again. I'm either going to get blown out of the water in this competition or I am going to absolutely smoke you because we're on separate sides again. I'm taking Georgia State in this one and I'm going to take the Panthers for 2 confidence points. So that wraps up the Pick'em competition. We'll see how it all plays out. We'll post these picks as we always do on Friday. Had some people start asking me, King, since the model's been performing well, yo, do you post these? Where are they? So I think we picked up a couple We Hate Your Team followers. I say, hey, we posted on the We Hate Your Team account. Go check it out. A couple guys have shot me DMs saying I started following. I'm moving up the rankings. Hey, follow if you want. Give me some credit if it works. I don't want any of that blame if it doesn't work, though, right? No, we take it on the chin when we're wrong, just like we take it on the back when we're right. King, let's get to you first here. We got best bets. Any best bets you want to give out? And then we can't have Kelly in Vegas on, a betting expert, a handicapping pro, and not get something from Kelly, so we're going to end with her.
Yeah, so we continue just to grind this season, Kelly. Another rough start last weekend. Luckily, we salvaged the night slate to go 500. But like Kelly's been talking about, a lot of 5-4, 4-3 weeks. It's been an absolute battle since the 1-7 opener. You never want a weekend like that. But we're going to continue to fight. And there are 3 road games, and I actually just put a 4th in. But I like Air Force minus 10.5 at Navy this week. This was a game that I actually got on last year. Navy burned me. I think that this offense and how they are going to be able to move the ball against this Navy defense, I think it separates them. This is a very good Air Force defense as well. We know how one-dimensional that Navy is on the offensive side. I like another road favorite I already mentioned, Ole Miss laying 6.5. I'm going to take the Blue Devils plus 14 at Florida State. And then I just did it. It's probably a dumb bet. There's so many reasons why I shouldn't do it. But this is part of the learning process, and I'm still not there yet. I am going to take the Canes plus 3.5. The card's definitely going to expand. Hopefully we can have a good weekend.
King, we've talked on all those with the exception of the Air Force, and I'm looking my line in that game, Air Force minus 14. So I do believe, based on my quick look here, that my numbers are in agreement with you, on your side of each of those with various levels of value based on the projected spread versus the Vegas. But good, I think good news from the model, I would agree with you on all of those leans. Kelly, what about you? Anything that you've got as maybe a best bet or somewhere you're leaning, again, at time of recording on Tuesday night?
Yeah, so this is really inconvenient for me to be giving out all these bets. If you'd asked me 3 weeks ago, I would have said, okay, I bet this on Monday, this on Tuesday, this and this. And then I had all of these CLV trophies that I stacked up. I beat the market so well and yet could not cash a single ticket. It was so frustrating. So last week I was in Albuquerque with grandma. She had told me that one of her things she wanted to do was go to the Balloon Fiesta. And I'm like, grandma, it's football season. This is worse than a football season wedding. But it worked out scheduling wise. We flew at 5 a.m. on Monday and flew back at 9 p.m. on a Tuesday. And I told myself, I said, I'm not doing any football work. Again, that just, it had just been such a grind and I wasn't making any like real moves. And I said, you know what? Fine. I'm going to change it up. So then, of course, I had a good weekend because I did not start my college football handicapping until the plane Tuesday night. So I have only bet 2 games so far, and that is Colorado State, which we talked about, and this one. Now, of course, I will tweet out the rest of my games that I end up getting involved in, but I just wanted to be fully transparent that I did try something new last week because what I was doing wasn't working for me. And so in order to kind of mix things up, that's just what I chose to do, and it worked out well. Does that mean it's going to work out well this week? We're going to find out. But the other game that I am on is Mississippi State, Arkansas. This could be a buy-low spot, if we're being completely frank. And I hope that it's not. This one opened 7. I did take the 7 early on. It's down to 6. So a nice little CLV trophy. Even if it doesn't cash, we get to pat ourselves on the back and tell everybody else how great we are because we got the best of the number, which is important, but not as important as cashing tickets. And so my one caveat here is, this is an Arkansas team who has now dropped 5 straight, but they've been in the mix, right? I was on BYU and I wasn't on BYU moneyline. I did not think BYU could go into Fayetteville and beat the Hogs, and they did. And since then, it's just kind of been more of the same. Just knockout, drag out fights, including last week that King had mentioned, Arkansas down 24-6 and all of a sudden comes back, gets the backdoor cover. Was that really on Arkansas, or did Alabama just kind of take their foot off the gas? We've seen Saban do that from time to time. And so that's where I kind of have to wonder. You've got this Mississippi State team that I think has shown some improvement. Can they go in and get the outright win? And that's what scares me here. I don't know if they can. And in order to make my parlay, I've got to be able to see that they are capable, right? So after losing 24-10 to Alabama, they came back. Or I'm sorry, that was Mississippi State. Excuse me. Mississippi, after losing their five straight, right? Ugly loss, Arizona. Getting smoked by LSU. Then they got in a dogfight with South Carolina, get smoked by Alabama, and then guess what? They didn't get the cover against Western Michigan 2 weeks ago. But you know what, guys? They got to have a bye week. Tell me that something happened in this bye week. We mentioned those 5-1 ATS and 6-0 ATS teams, and I'm going to have some data to back this up, but I did not have a chance to access the database. There becomes a point in time where teams are either due for positive or negative regression. And I would not be surprised to see this Mississippi State team start to turn a corner coming out of this bye. That is the one thing I did want to pull up. I asked for this chart from my good friend Ralph Michaels, and then I still didn't have it pulled up in time after doing this entire show. Off a bye week. Let's see, where is it at? And I still don't know where it is. That's a total fail by me. But in my defense, it is midnight here on the East Coast, and it is so far past my bedtime. But in all jokes aside, I do think that we will see, here we go, game 6-7 off a bye. Teams on the road as away dogs, 51.1%. Unfortunately, nothing to really back up Mississippi State there. But I do think this is a team that really is going to take advantage of an Arkansas team that is also just completely morally defeated.
Morally defeated, worn out. Five straight losses, you said, Kelly. Four of those away from Fayetteville. You mentioned Mississippi State coming off the bye. These are things the model can't account for. This scheduling dynamics, the rest discrepancy. These are some of those intangibles we talked about. But as you said, Kelly, we are now past midnight on the East Coast here. We've been going for an hour and a half. We so appreciate your time. This has been an absolute blast. Kelly, we're going to get you out of here. Go ahead,
Kay. And that's what I got. I know we are time. Kelly's been very gracious from her time. We really appreciate it. You brought a dynamic to this podcast that we have not had before. It's been awesome having you on as a guest. And I got to ask, because we've had a couple Kansas State guests on the show previously, and the answers have varied slightly. So I want to leave you with this question. As the diehard Kansas State fan with you, as you are, who's the biggest rival? Which Big 12 team do you dislike the most?
Oh, come on. This isn't even up for debate.
Ooh, okay.
Everybody thinks it's who. Well, I want to know who other people think it is, because there's only one right answer here.
The two that we've gotten, King, or correct me if I'm wrong, the two we've gotten consistently, and we have had three or four Kansas State folks on, has been Kansas and has been Iowa State.
Yes.
Okay, so. Yeah, I don't care about Iowa State. Farmageddon, what a joke. The answer is Texas. We hate Texas.
Oh, okay.
There is a dynamic here. Okay, have you noticed? My birthday is the KU game. I'm not going to travel to Lawrence, Kansas. I'm going 3 weeks prior because that's the game that matters. KU has not been relevant in football for so long. K-State basketball has not been relevant for so long. Thank you, Frank Martin, for trying to turn a corner until our asshole athletic director pushed you out. And then we got stuck with Bruce Weber. And now we get Jerome Tang. And I hope this renewed rivalry comes back, because I had so much fun at Bramlage Coliseum last year, overtime against KU, that maybe we can finally start to hate each other again. But no, I hate Texas way more than I could ever hate the Jayhawks. I actually laughed with one of my Texas buddies the other day because he said, "What do you hate Texas so much?" I'm like, "I don't know. We owned Texas." There was like a stretch after Texas won the national championship where K-State just owned him. I'm talking women's basketball, baseball, track, anything. It was just like we had all these. And then now all of a sudden, the last 6 years, Texas has gotten the best of Kansas State, basically under Chris Klieman, and it has been so frustrating. So to answer that question, it's definitely not Iowa State. Do I have horrible memories as a child with an 8-win K-State team going into Ames and losing as like 21-point favorites? Sure. That is not fun times. But stop it. Rivalries have to be – they have to go both ways. You have to have equal hatred. And KU didn't like their football team enough to hate us as a football team, and we didn't like our basketball team enough to hate KU as a basketball team. Now I'm hoping we get back to those days because I would love to hate KU, and Texas is going to the SEC. But as of right now, the only correct answer is Texas.
Well, I absolutely love that. It's different than what we've had before, and I can tell. I apologize for getting you riled up about Texas after 12 Eastern. I could hear the passion in her voice right there, but I love the answer. It's been great having you on, Kelly.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, I don't think Kelly's going to be able to go to bed now. She is too fired up talking about this hatred for Texas. So anyway, Kelly, last thing before we get you out of here, I'm sure people listening, they probably already know, but just go ahead, plug everything you want to plug. Where can people find you? All the shows that you're on. You've been such a fantastic guest. We would hate for anybody to have listened and not know where they can go find your work. So just plug it, plug away.
Yeah, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter is Kelly in Vegas, KellyInVegas. You can find me over at Wager Talk. I am their vice president of media relations. It's pretty cool when you own the company, you get to give yourself a fancy title. So that's what I gave myself. I host all of the videos, including Bet on It, with, as you said, former guest Ralph Michaels. He does all the trends and angles segment. He's always been a mentor to me. He has taught me so much about the other side of things, the non-math things that still involve math, of course, but more of the situations and things to look at as in terms of flat spots, etc. So we do that in college football and NFL. I do a show with Superbook Sports called Kelly and Murray with my good buddy and bookmaker, John Murray from the Westgate Superbook out there in Las Vegas. So I was really happy that we got to revamp that show this year. I've done some stuff for BetQL. That's actually how I found Kelly Ford. I hopped in after him one day. I actually hopped done early and I heard his announcement. I was like, oh, this guy's really good. I'm going to look at and check out his stuff. And I started following him on Twitter. And let's see, what else do I do? I'm doing some stuff for Better, which is really out of my wheelhouse. I worked with those guys over at Bleacher Report and I absolutely adore them. They have so much fun. But the prop market has just made me want to gouge my eyeballs out. It is never something that I've dipped my toe in. One of my best friends, Ariel Epstein, crushes it. Every time she shares a prop bet with me, dead on loser. So she told me last week, she's not sharing with me anymore. And I finally hit my first fantasy lineup with the prop market because I did not ask her for any help. So that was really fun. And then last but not least, I am now with Outkick. I'm doing a show called The Fade with Clay Travis. He smoked me in fantasy football. So for the first 5 minutes of the show this week, he gets to talk about his 2.6 point win. And yeah. It's been a really fun football season. Got to pick some more winners, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
Absolutely, Kelly. You have been phenomenal. Kinger knows this, Kelly. I'll be up until, 2, 3, 4 in the morning working on the model, working on the ratings, trying to get things done and ready. I feel like I work hard, and I'm doing a lot of college football things. Kelly, I'm going to say my biggest takeaway from you on the show, which there's been a lot, trust me, you just work harder than everyone else. You are in more places. You are doing more things. You have built yourself up to this point. You deserve everything that's coming to you in the positive direction. All those haters and everything, you just mute them and move on. I get it. But it's very impressive what you've accomplished. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. I know King and I really enjoyed it. Hopefully our listeners did too. Until next time, everyone, this has been the We Hate Your Team podcast, a proud member of the BSN Collegiate Network. Enjoy week 8 of the 2023 college football season.